listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. The following program may contain adult themes, discussion, and content that some people may find offensive. If you consider yourself likely to be offended, then perhaps you'd like to tune to another frequency for the next hour. If you have any feedback or would like to see information about our other shows, please go online to radioreverb.com.
Good evening. Welcome to the HIV Hour. Another day, another dollar in the world of radio, David.
Yeah, good evening, Josh. Nice to be together with you online.
Yeah, we're doing this online today, aren't we? Because we've got a few things going on, haven't we? So we're doing it zooming. We're zooming.
We are zooming around all over the place.
Yes. So welcome to the HIV Hour on this Thursday evening. Hope everyone's okay out there. How about you, Dave? What have you been up to last week?
You know what? I've been doing some decorating. We've had some builders in recently, and fixing a leak in the roof, so the ceiling has to be sort of repainted. So I've been putting up masking tape and painting that, and trying not to get all the white specks in my hair because I'm grey enough. I am.
But it's good to get it done, isn't it? Really, all that kind of stuff.
Spring, bit of a spring clean, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how are you? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been getting ready because we're going to play my. I think I've bored everyone with this before. No, I'm not saying boring. No. I've got a new. I've got my first track coming out with. I'm collaborating with a mate of mine called Azaro, who's had tracks out before. So we're getting ready. We're gearing up to release date in July. So we're going to start. Going to play it today, which is.
I'm going to play it today, aren't we? I'm quite excited.
Yes, which I'm excited about. But also, it's about I'm doing a remix, and it's just interesting getting involved in how a track comes out, as a music track is released, and what you have to do. So it's very interesting, the process of it all.
And it's not been played on any other radio station so far, has it? It's got official launch.
No, I mean we're starting to send out the mixes to radio stations and DJs, so we're getting some good feedback off them, and obviously really good feedback and you know, constructive feedback. So it's great, and they're starting to play it out. So it's really exciting. Quite scared about it because I've never done this kind of thing before, but at the same time, it's really exciting stuff.
Oh, you'll be fine. Yeah. You've got such an ear for music, haven't you?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And I think that's something I'm kind of realising about myself. Mm. I've kind of always pushed it down, and I think recently I've started to realise that actually I'm not too bad.
Well, you've been a DJ for how many years? I can remember.
Yeah, 30 years.
A long time ago, yeah. Wow. Speaking of which, I mean, a long time ago, today is International Long-Term Survival.
Yes, big day today, isn't it, really?
We have an interview with Les Wright and Mark Stevens. So Mark, we've had on the show before, I think in 2023, talking about his experience being a long-term survivor. And he's worked with Les on a book. He's contributed towards Les's book, which is an anthology of oral histories of people who have been living with HIV for a long time. So we've got that coming up in two parts, haven't we?
They're not in this country either. They're further afield, aren't they?
So when I interviewed Les and so Mark, Les was in East Coast United States. Hello, everyone.
Right.
We love you all. And then I think Mark was on holiday in Portugal, but we love the people in Portugal just as much, don't we?
Yeah, no, it's good to get a different perspective as well. It's such an important day, I think, and it might get overshadowed sometimes, but I think it's an amazing day, isn't it?
It is, because I mean, no, we know HIV has been around for, what, 40 years, don't we?
And
More. And, you know, there are people still around from those early days, and, you know, they're getting now into their 70s and 80s, and their voices and experience are really invaluable in helping shape care for people with HIV and other conditions and other pandemics that have...
So that's a good show. It's coming up, isn't it? We've got some great music.
Yeah. So, shall we have the first track?
Yeah, what is it?
Yeah, so this is, on a theme of surviving, it's Survivor by Two Way and Eddie Hayes. Welcome back to the HIV Hour. What a tune that was. On Brighton Radio Reverb, .com, and also, don't forget, we have our own website, hivhour.org.uk. We're really proud to be sponsored by Jack Russell Technologies.
Yes, definitely.
I'm really grateful for every donation that you could forward to the Radio Reverb coffers. That'd be great, because we are an independent radio station with no adverts. We really do welcome any contributions you can make. So let's We were talking about
How do they do that, David? Sorry, so how do they donate?
Absolutely, yeah. We can go to radioreverb.com and there is a donate button. So,
Yeah, it's quite simple, isn't it? Yeah.
so before the last song, we mentioned the interview with Les Wright and Mark Stevens, and let's hear it now. Good evening. Welcome to the HIV Hour on Brighton 97.2 FM and DAB Plus Radio. I'm really pleased that on this edition of the show is on, broadcast on Long-Term Survivors Day. And I'm really pleased to be joined online by Mark Stevens and Les Wright. Good evening to you both.
Hi, David.
Lovely to see you both, and thanks for you know, arranging to meet us across the Atlantic, Les. So I really just going to throw this question out to both of you. I don't know who wants to answer first, but I'll leave it up to you. Why do we have a Long-Term Survivors Day?
Yeah, Long-Term Survivors Day was founded by, there's a group of long-term survivor AIDS activists in San Francisco, and it's called the Kick-Ass group. And a number of years ago, a call was put out for long-term survivors to get together, to just find each other. And there was a huge turnout. And they, in the meantime, have formed, you know, a collective, continued to do activism, and I can talk about some of what they've been doing. And they decided to proclaim a Long-Term Survivors Day for public awareness that many of us are still here. Tez Anderson, that's the name of the founder.
Right. I think we've heard of Kick-Ass. So the ass is AIDS survivors syndrome, is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. And I think we mentioned, the last time Mark was on the show, we mentioned it briefly, didn't we, Mark?
We did. I think it's a great name. Fantastic name.
Yeah. and I think, I know, when we spoke, that, you know, we should have it in this country. And I think, and it's great that this show can sort of observe it and bring light to it.
It's a very recent awareness in this country. You asked the question about why. 3 years ago, I rang around all the London, at least the London organisations, and most of them were just not aware of it. And most didn't see a point in celebrating it. And there may be many reasons for this, perhaps because the long-term survivors in the country are very invisible. We might have chosen to be so, but there wasn't much awareness that many of us were still around. I mean, you had the stalwarts, Martin Wicker to Tony Whitehead. But in terms of numbers, there weren't many. But there are quite a few in the 3 years that I've run around with this issue. There are more than I had thought originally. And I think it's, Les is absolutely right. It's about the awareness of the day and the awareness of the contribution of long-term survivors, but also what they can bring to the history. Because I think it's been about 40 years now since this all, 40-odd years since it's kicked off in the country. And I think we've forgotten them. We're not wanting to bash people with the horror of it, but bring an authenticity and a realism to the history of that time, because I think it's lost its impact, unfortunately, and there isn't much awareness of it. So it's great that there is this day, and thank you to your podcast for bringing us on to raise awareness of the day and Les's great anthology of stories.
Yeah, so that's nice. Les, tell us about your anthology.
Oh, my. Well, it finally was released about a week ago. And it's, oh, my God. It's, kind of, well, the short version of the long story is that Hank Trout, who used to be editor of A&U magazine for HIV coverage, had tried to do this, what ended up being my book, and he got no responses whatsoever. And several years later, when I had also become really aware that we have no presence and that we are, you know, starting to leave this planet, and also I've done many, many years, I've been doing oral histories for Bear History, gay Bear History. And it seemed very important to me to save the life stories of my fellow survivors before we're gone. And it was over 3 years it took me, and I write about this in the introduction. It was very challenging, A, to find people to talk to, and B, to convince them to contribute their story to the book. And very challenging, but I persisted and persisted, and eventually ended up with a lot more contributors than I had hoped for.
That's good. Yeah.
And that's how the book came into being.
What do you think was what do you think held people back from contributing their stories? Was it fear of stigma or just wanting to not talk about the dark times and having to face that again?
Yes, I think some of the people did not want to go back, much as, war veterans never talked about their war experiences later in life. And some, I think, considered it, well, this is something that happened a long time ago and it's no longer important to me. And some people think were just petrified at having to write.
You're a great editor, though, Les. I had one day an email saying, "Your sentences are too long." So I made the adjustment. But it's great. Good editor.
So have you contributed to this project, Mark?
Yeah, I have. That's how I found came in touch with Les. I was just rooting around one day. We don't have, as they do in America, any HIV publications. And I think that's probably another contributing factor as to why we're not aware of it in this country. We lost Poznation many, many years ago. And it's a great shame because th there is so much that can be continued to be said about the HIV community around the world, as particularly in London as well, but we don't have it. And that's a great shame. So that's why I went rooting for it, because I was a positive speaker, but our agendas just didn't mix. I wasn't interested in zero transmission because it's not my agenda. I wanted to talk about the history of it. No, get out. Talk about the history of it. And I just didn't have the opportunity in the UK. So it was a great one that came along, and Les very kindly let me put my story in amongst a great batch of stories. I've read the whole lot, and I really encourage you and if to get a copy, David. It's really worth interesting. It's different. It's American. And I'm the English voice, but it's a great mix of stories. And it's not just all on survivors as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bobby,
Well, I was gonna say I was thrilled to hear from you. One of the things I had been looking for was long-term survivors outside the United States, and that was even more challenging to find people. And the one other thing I wanted to share that was difficult and disappointing, when I was putting out a call for submissions, I had reached out to the San Francisco AIDS Foundation, the GMHC in New York City, and SAGE, the national office for senior LGBT people in the United States, and all three of them said, "We're not interested."
Really
Yeah, it was very disappointing.
strange.
Yeah.
Strange. I had a call to action in my emails this week, and it was from the Journal of Infectious Diseases, and it contains lots of quotes from long-term survivors in the United States. I'll send you a copy, but it was a call to
Thank
action
you.
to do with the the current government in the United States and their funding cuts. I'll let you comment on that one.
Government is a kind word for
Administration, yeah.
millennialism in the White House. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll share that. But yeah, it's about the, I think it's called the cost of silence. But and
Okay.
it just yeah, it's just it's reading some of the quotes in there. It makes you realize the horrors. I mean, I've you know, I was diagnosed in 1993, so a mere youngster compared to the two of you, but still, it was before treatment, and I remember still it being quite a dark time, and I remember the COVID epidemic reminded me of how you watched it cross the globe, and we saw these first cases of strange cancers in gay men in San Francisco, and then we realized that it was coming our way to the UK. And that was it was scary times, wasn't it?
That was, and there was a sort of a creeping awareness in London about the whole thing and the denial that no, this is an American problem. This isn't going to come here. Then we really got a slap in the face. But I think in the UK, I think there's still a denial about long-term survival. People aren't that necessarily interested in it, and I can't figure out why. We're just not part of the agenda at the moment in terms of what they want to do. In terms of serial intervention, but I think we have so much to give to the community in terms of what we created. We don't. I don't necessarily want any sort of gratitude for that. I just want an awareness of it, that there's so much more we can pick from this to take forward, particularly in what the battles are to come. So I think it's an important story to be told.
Yeah, well, you really consider the charities that formed, they're all grassroots charities formed by people who are now long-term survivors.
Two things I wanted to mention. One is, I was very disappointed that as COVID took root in the United States, the media and I think the medical community, went back to the influenza epidemic of 1918, 1919, omitted the AIDS epidemic. Seemed to be oblivious to the fact that there were a lot of survivors from that epidemic who had experience and insight to share. And the other thing, and kind of, scrolling back a few paragraphs here, for the purposes of my book, I wanted to interview people or have stories from people who were all diagnosed before the three drug cocktail, where for all of us, the diagnosis was an automatic death sentence, and which was profoundly influential on all of us in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, how old were you when you were diagnosed, Les?
Let's see. Well, I was infected in I was in San Francisco. I was infected in 81, so I was 28, and it took off immediately. I had been infected, and it was believed that all of the gay men in San Francisco were infected, and we'd all die. And I was finally diagnosed when the first test, the ELISA test, was developed, and that was in 1986. So I would have been, what is that, 33. And I was a part of the first study that was done through UC San Francisco Medical School, and I went through the process, and this is where the testing came from. And they told me I was in the highest risk category. And frankly, they didn't know I was still alive.
So your anthology was published this week.
Yes.
So we're just coming at the end of this part of the interview. I think where can people read it and get hold of it?
It's available on Amazon for international distribution. So people in the UK should be able to order it on Amazon, and it will be printed. It's through Ingram, and it would be printed in the UK.
Great.
Also, we're arranging two events in August in London to launch the book. And we've got a really exciting panel. We've got Les, of course. We've got Jonathan Blake, who is a long-term survivor, and everybody loves and knows Jonathan. And we've got a female. Sorry, Les, I haven't had a chance to bring you up to speed on this, but it only happened last Friday. We've got a female long-term survivor who has also agreed to sit in it. And I'm not going to give her name out until I've got a definite confirmation, but she's very well known. And I think if I could squeeze onto that panel myself, it's a very illustrious panel.
Great.
Of
Have you got a date fixed for that, just for our listeners?
The event at Positive Beast is on the 4th of August at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And we'll be making people aware of that later. Mm-hmm. And then the Morton Market Street Clinic, hoping to get more a mix of professionals, medical professionals in the HIV sector, as well as patients as well. And that's on the 6th of August and at the Morton Market Clinic. And again, not sure of the route in, but it'll be made known to the patients at Morton Market. But I think both will be accessible.
Les, let's carry on from where we left off, shall we?
All right. Yes, in 1986, I was completing my doctoral studies at UC Berkeley, and I was casting about for a dissertation theme. Now, I had gone through the comparative literature program. However, cultural studies had become a big part of literary studies, and so that was my justification to move over into, I was looking at the social construction of AIDS, and it was kind of my farewell tour. In the summer of 86, I went to Europe to visit all of my friends there. I was a graduate student in Germany for much of the 70s. So I had, you know, a long life in Europe. And I wanted to say goodbye to all of my friends because I was expecting to die fairly soon. And I combined that with this research project of talking to people about social construction of AIDS, specifically as a gay disease. And what I had learned was that it had not yet kind of taken that specifically gay disease that had taken root. And, you know, I went to Stockholm and interviewed a doctor working with AIDS. I went to Berlin and interviewed the people at the Deutsche AIDS-Hilfe. I went to Paris, where I interviewed Daniel Defer, who is the surviving spouse of Michel Foucault, and I'm a huge Foucault disciple. And I visited some other friends in the process. And anyways, I flew directly to the continent and did not go to the UK on that trip. And, you know, looking back now, I didn't die, but that was my farewell tour because all of those friends are now long gone. The last of my friends, George Hallberg in Stockholm, died 2 years ago.
Yeah, I know someone in Brighton, he tells me that he buried about 80 friends.
Yeah.
Over the years, which is a shocking amount of loss and grief for anybody, and especially when people die so young as well. And as we get to an older age, it's almost expected, but it's really important. Yeah. These oral histories are maintained and saved, aren't they? Because they are a useful resource for future pandemics and ways of developing strategies to cope with people who are, you know, living on the edges of society and how they cope.
It's interesting. I retired 3 years ago and people said to me, how did you prepare for your retirement? What's it like getting older? And I said to them, listen, I retired a long time ago. When they told me I had 6 months to live, like Les, you retire. So I've done this all before. Mm. And they say, how do you cope with getting old? Well, in those days, HIV, it aged you terribly, and it aged you even worse with the drugs. So I've been through all that, so I have nothing to fear. And I kind of think what it's given me is I'm really relaxed about getting older now, in the way that I don't see my cohorts who are friends who are the same age who are diagnosed. They worry about it, but I've been through. I'm not saying it's the best. I recommend everyone go through that as a rehearsal, but that's I'm very grateful to be alive, but also very grateful I've got that experience behind me, so I'm not worried too much about stuff. I mean, I know things are, there is all these issues now about comorbidities, and that we are age, internally, our ages are 10 years older than what they should be. But that's okay. I mean, I've been through the worst of it. What have I not got to be grateful for? My friends are dead. I'm alive. So let's embrace what we've got in our life. And I think that's a message I'd like to get out to the newbies, because I feel that I hear they go through so much angst about this, and it is awful. The worst thing that somebody can say these days is that a diagnosis was different then. The context was, but a diagnosis is a diagnosis. And you still have to deal with it regardless of the condition. And when I run into or read about or hear about newbies who have been diagnosed and the pain they go through, I just hope they can take something from long-term survivors that we made it. And it's not going to be as tough as you want, but it is about making choices. And what I was most interested to write about in Les's book was not from the point of diagnosis. What I wanted to write about was the events that led up to it, in terms of how a character develops, in terms of the resilience that you gain, so that you make choices based upon who you have been and where you've come from. And I don't think this made any difference to my survival in terms of getting through, but it made a difference to how I dealt with it. And that was, I didn't scream, I didn't crack up, or I didn't do all of those things, because I had all those characters that somehow my life had given me. Like, if you've been to English boarding school, David, you know that you learn resilience very quick, and you need resilience. As I'm sure Les would say, resilience very quickly. When I got my first SPD, I went to an SPD clinic, and I made sure I went regularly. Yeah. So it's all those little things, and having a good set of friends, as Les would say, around you to sort of, as you move through. So there's a lot to tell people and share with people, particularly those who are newly diagnosed. And I hope they will be aware of the anthology and read it, because there's some interesting stories. I love Harry Breaux's story.
Yeah, Harry Breaux is wonderful. He's one of the AIDS Act, long-term survivor AIDS activists. He recently turned 80. They did a huge coverage and celebration of him in San Francisco. And I'm tempted to say they had a Harry Breaux Day. I don't know, but he's like a very famous personality now.
He's my hero, will you?
Brilliant. So you two will be at the events in London in August, both of you, will you?
I believe so, yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So it's myself, Leslie, Jonathan Blake, and the other woman. It's a great panel, with Les and Jonathan and Winnie. There's some real stories there. But did you get a chance to look at Jonathan, Les? Jonathan Blake.
Oh yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah. He was on the show recently with a poet that's created a booklet about Patient P1, as he was known. Back in the day. So just to remind listeners, the Mortimer Market reading of the anthology of Les is on the 6th of August, and there's one at Positive East on the 4th of August at 5 p.m. So please stay tuned for those and look out, and I'm sure we can put some links in on our webpage as well about that. Yeah, so how many people did you gather for the anthology, Les? You said it was more than you expected.
Yeah, I think it was 15.
Right, that's good. That is good. Yeah. And are these people, obviously, that you hadn't met before, most of them?
Well, actually, I know over half of them personally, because how I finally started getting submissions is that I approached people that I knew from a variety of social and professional circles in San Francisco and asked them. Yeah,
word of mouth. Yeah. And are they concentrated in any particular area in America, or is it across the country as a whole?
Yeah, they're mostly San Francisco people, and I own up to that in the introduction, that the reason why that is because they're from my circles, and I had hoped, anyways, and I'm hoping that this book will inspire someone else.
Yeah.
To interview those people that I was not able to make contact with.
Because major cities like New York or Washington, they're equally going to have a core or a small community of long-term survivors. So hopefully someone will take up the challenge there. Listen, it's been really great to chat to you both. I hope we can send a reporter your way for the August readings. Wish you every success with the anthology. Thank you very much, Les Wright and Mark Stevens.
Thank you, David.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, David.
Welcome back to the HRV Hour on 97.2 FM and RadioReverb.com online. That was great, that song, wasn't it? That interview, that's really interesting.
It was, yeah. And I really hope that we can get someone along to see the two events in August at the Mortimer Market
right.
And at Positive East, which will be Les reading extracts from his book with other long-term survivors. So
so important.
Look out for that, folks.
So I'm just looking through what long-term survivors, because I was thinking about it. I was thinking, am I qualified as a long-term survivor? And I think individuals who have been with the virus for 10 years or longer are long-term survivors, as well as people who weren't on the HRT before.
Yeah, without doubt. So, you know, people that were diagnosed before treatment, I would definitely say they're long-term survivors, and they're the voices that Les and others are collecting, because these are the people now that are in their 70s and 80s. It's important to collect and collate or curate these stories and life experiences, because they're really valuable, and to recognize that the struggles and how they championed living to a long life.
And it's also, it paves the way for people who have been diagnosed recently. So it's like, it shows people who are newly diagnosed that you can live a healthy life and that's a good thing, I think. Also, individuals born with HIV are long-term survivors, aren't they?
Yes, I believe you're right. Yeah. There is a website that I think Les mentioned briefly, or Let's Kick Ass is Kick Ass is or Kick Ass stands for Kick AIDS Survivor Syndrome, and there's a website called letskickass.hiv. So if you go along onto that website, there's lots of information about events that are happening in the United States, particularly in San Francisco. There's a world premiere of a film. There's a theme to this year's Long-Term Survivors Day, which is leading with legacy, encouraging survivors. So answering questions about how do you want to be remembered? Because a lot of the long-term survivors are the activists that set up the charities that we take for granted today. So it's the friends, for example, of Terence Higgins.
Yeah.
The people that created the Terence Higgins Trust, and look how many people that has helped over the years, or the Ryan White Foundation, or the Elizabeth Glazer AIDS Foundation, even the Elizabeth Taylor AIDS Foundation, they've all, long-term survivors were the people that have helped create those services.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just got a few other services, but I think there's a lot in America, but I think you can join them. I don't think it's just solely for America. It's HIV.gov, that's the National Institute of Health, provides information and resources related to HIV and AIDS, including long-term survivors. The Well Project, I know that's another American, I think it's in New York, that. This organization offers a variety of resources and support for people living with HIV, including long-term survivors. GMHC, so that's another one for older adults. And our Terence Higgins Trust is another one that always... we can talk about. So they're growing older with HIV. They older people are the fastest growing group of people living with HIV in the UK, which we've talked about, haven't we? So new diagnoses of HIV in the over 50s continue to increase, and the proportion of new diagnoses in this group almost doubling over the last decade.
Wow.
From 9.6 in 2007 to 18% in 2016. Nearly 4 in 10 people living with HIV are over the age of 50. And that's going to increase. I think they think it's going to reach 54% by 2028.
Right, so over half, yeah.
Right. So it's because we're living longer, isn't it? And
we've great thing to celebrate championship. We've got a lot to celebrate as well as commemorate, haven't we?
Absolutely, I think that's it. They published a pioneering report, Terence Higgins Trust, called The Uncharted Territory. So it reports it's produced by peer researchers, a team of volunteers living with HIV, aged 50 and over. It's designed to give an insight into the experience of what it's like to grow older with HIV and the challenges that we face.
Right.
So I think if you go on the Terence Higgins website, THT.org. I think you can read the uncharted territory. So
Uncharted territory. So that's good search
yeah.
term. Uncharted territory. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's all to do with like the comorbidities as well, aren't there? Things we can get as we get older that can be related to HIV, isn't it? So all the it's called comorbidities, and that can be that's the hardest thing, I think, challenging.
And also, you know, especially if they're sort of aging conditions, we know, and science has proved that, you know, we are aging sooner. We still age in the same way, but we age sooner than patients who are not living with HIV.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and also I was looking through earlier. I was just researching what in this country we have for long-term survivors. Have you heard of HIV? I guess right, HIV vitality .co.com, I think it is. Have you heard of them?
Vitality.
Vitality. What did I say?
Vitality. It's right.
Vitality. Vitality. Let's change that.
Yeah, I'll do that again. Zoom, it's a bit muffled sometimes, isn't it? But yeah.
HIV. Yeah, sorry. I'll do that again. What did I say? Vitality. So have you heard of HIV Vitality? That's right.
No, David? I haven't. No.
So that's a UK-based organisation that do retreats for people with HIV, and they specialise in people with long-term survivors. So, they have retreats throughout the year.
Right. I'm just looking at their website now, and it's HIV Vitality, isn't it?
It's my northern, sorry, my northern accent.
No, it's one word, so HIV and then...
Vitality.
Vitality, not Vitality. We'll put a link on the episode page, shall we?
Yeah, so the retreats are a sanctuary designed to help individuals living with HIV thrive and find renewed strength. So they focus on holistic well-being. I know you do a lot of this stuff, don't you, David, at the Sussex Beacon?
Yep.
Retreats are designed to help individuals cope with the challenges of living with HIV, improve their well-being and mental health, and forge lasting connections within a supportive community.
Brilliant.
So I can give you their details, actually, because it's just it's hivvitality.org.uk. If you want to send them an email, it's info@hivvitality.org.uk. And the next retreats are in September at the Nightingale Centre in Buxton, and December in Shelliford House, Stafford.
Right.
Just check out our website and you'll see, because it shows you all the where they are. It looks really nice, actually.
Yeah, I'm just looking. They've got dates booked, but dates set for 2026 as well. So
and the place looks nice as well, actually.
Yeah.
And there's one in Perthshire as well. They go to in Scotland, so it looks quite nice. I'm actually thinking of doing that. Actually, maybe I'm gonna look into it. Maybe get them on the show.
Let's look into it. Yeah, let's do that.
Mm. Yeah. So, is it time for a song or?
I think it is. And you know
what? Oh, it's time for the drum roll. I'm
looking forward to this. The drum roll, please.
The drum roll, my dear. Track the music. Shall we have a listen to it and then we'll
please
come back. How was that, David? Was
I'm really impressed, Josh. I'm beaming with pride on your behalf. It's fantastic. I love it. I was tapping my toes to it.
That's good. We're trying to get people to do the dance and celebrate to the music and you know, a lot of social media with the TikToks.
Yeah.
TikToking. But it's hard going into social. I am into social media to a certain degree, but it's a pressure sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah. So we can put links into the...
Yes, that was brilliant.
Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, for sure. And then the official release date is July, you say?
The 11th of July. So our first stage gig is going to be the Bear Weekend, Brighton Bear Weekend, which is coming up on the 12th and 13th of July.
Yeah.
So me and Azaro have got a dance slot. It's going to be 1:30 at the Dorset Gardens.
Yeah.
So that's where we're doing our first set there. So please come along. But we're going to have Graham from the Bear Weekend, the Bear Chair, coming in the beginning of July to talk about the Bear Weekend. So I'm sure we'll talk about it then.
So I wish you every success with that, Josh. You really do deserve it. I know you've worked hard on it. Should we have some community news now?
Yes, I think so. So just leading on from the long-term survivors day. So I know Lunch Positive do a over 50s lunch club, don't they,
They
David?
do, yes. I've been to quite a few of them. They're really nice.
And so that's usually on a Wednesday evening. I think, did you say that you might have gone to quarterly now for a
Think so,
while?
yeah. Do you want me to check the website?
Yeah, I mean, we could just, I mean, just check up. Actually, if you're interested in going to one of them, just go on the website, lunchpositive.org.uk, and it gives you all the events and things they do anyway. So, also, I've got, let's have a look. Let's have a look. So, well, so the Queen's Arms, which is on George Street in Brighton, are doing a Dragsy Malone.
Really?
So, the Drag Improv Musical. So you can join them at the Queen's Arms in Brighton on the 20th of June. It's a mad musical raising funds for the Sussex Beacon. The fabulous cast is made up of six drag queens, which includes Sally Bate, Caravan Park, Portia, Glenda Swing, Rita Herringbone, and Tanya Hyde. So what happens is they arrive for breakfast at 12 p.m. and they have 6 hours to learn, rehearse, and get ready for the full show at 6 p.m.
Wow. That's going to be quite a marathon, an event, a marathon, an event. I don't know.
Yeah, like an event there. And then, so if you want to go, standing tickets are £10, seated tickets are £15, and all money goes to the Sussex Beacon. You will, if you go through Eventbrite, you'll be charged a fee. So just to let you know that.
Good to know.
Yeah. Also, if you like walking, the Terence Higgins Trust are doing their summer 10 km walk. I think it's from the 1st of June to the 31st of August. I think you can do it whenever you want during that
Sounds good.
time.
Yeah.
There's no like rush, and you don't have to do it all in one go. So join others across the UK to walk 10 km and raise money to help them end new cases of HIV in the UK by 2030. You can complete your 10 km walk whenever and wherever you want. The money you raise will also help us to continue supporting people living with HIV, which is always a good thing. I mean, it's just go onto their website, and again, you'll see the link to how you register and join. So, yeah, it's tht.org.uk.
10K walk, and that just reminds me that last edition we episode we featured Sue and her crowdfunding for the campaign of Can't Pass It On in the pilot for Brighton Hove, and she did a fantastic job. She beat her target to
Which is
help
brilliant. Well done, Sue.
project, and I hope it's gone down really well, because if it does, and it's too early to tell with all the data and social media data coming in, but it will be rolled out nationally. So well done, Sue, and the team, her team.
Yeah, such a good campaign as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And it's so good because Brighton was involved, and it was the initial town, wasn't it? So city, so it's great.
So we can chalk that one up for another first for Brighton, can't we? Brilliant.
Absolutely. Well, I also will just mention that we've got the Stigma Day coming up as well. So that's in July the 21st, isn't it? So that's coming up. So
Great. Yes, well, but more details about nearer the time.
yes. So I've come to the end of the show. Is that that's gone
We
really
have
quick.
indeed gone quick. Yeah. So let's play out with this wonderful song from Jose Gonzalez.
Oh, thanks for tuning in.
Bye.
See you next time. Bye.